WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A new roundabout in Crozet aims for safer traffic, but not all residents are convinced. Power companies want to build a new transmission line in central Virginia. The neighbors are voicing concerns at public information meetings. And one controversial bill before the governor would limit local restrictions on large solar farms. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, March 19. Between 2000 and 2020, Crozet's population more than tripled. Growth that has crowded schools, created water worries, and snarled traffic. A new roundabout now aims to ease commuters' ride from the rural hamlet. But not everyone's convinced. WMRA's Christine Cuter reports.
It's a sickening sound Chris Osagela knows well.
Normally a big bang. Yeah, normally a big bang. And then you hear kind of like the tires kind of just, you know, burn a little. We've gone out there running to see if they're all doing okay. We've seen them crying. We've seen them get on, the ambulance has to come. They have to get on the stretcher. You know, it's sad. And we have a window right there.
Osagela is the operations manager at Fiesta Azteca, a popular restaurant west of Charlottesville located at the junction of three roads where more than 45 car accidents have happened over the last 5 years. To him, a new roundabout is good news.
You know, we've seen many cars come in, you know, fast, like faster than what they're supposed to come into. And unfortunately, many accidents have to happen for us to get something like this going. It's much safer like this.
10 years after it was proposed and nearly a year after work began, a new roundabout at the Route 240-250 split opened last Friday, March 13th. Meant to keep vehicles moving, slow traffic, and reduce the severity of crashes, the new roundabout is one of roughly a dozen across the county that aims to soothe a critical juncture poised to grow even busier. About 116,000 people lived in Albemarle County in 2024. And officials estimate that another 31,000 more residents will move in over the next two decades. Crozet, an unincorporated town a dozen miles west of Charlottesville, is one of five designated growth areas in the county. Crozet had 2,800 residents in 2000. Today, it's more than three times as big and more than six times the size it was in 1970. Crozet grew up around a railroad stop at a local farm. Many of its housing developments today use founding farmers' names, Wayland's Grant, Corey Farm, Bargament Park. But Crozet's transition from rural hamlet to bustling suburb has occasionally been fraught. Many say development has outpaced infrastructure, incongruencies that show up in its schools, sidewalks, parking spots, water sources, and its traffic. Lisa McCauley has been trimming hair and beards at the Modern Barbershop on Crozet Avenue for the last 37 years. She grew up in Crozet and remembers riding her bike around town, something she wouldn't dare let her grandchildren do today.
Well, everybody's in a hurry. Most of the time you can stand out there 5-10 minutes before it clears for you to cross, or somebody will stop to let us across. Like, you know, and I just know, like, if I go to the cleaners to drop towels off or pick them up, don't go around 8 o'clock.
McCauley worries about clogged roadways impacting emergency responders and too few parking spaces in Crozet's tiny downtown, especially once the former site of Barnes Lumber gets its facelift, which may include a hotel, outdoor stage, mixed-use commercial buildings, and park.
You know, I mean, there's good people moving here that are that way as well, but the world is changing. I see a lot of the people I grew up with here and family have moved away because of the growth. And this is always going to be a gauntlet where the trestle is.
Roundabouts have become a go-to in Albemarle County, at least partially because of the uncertainty they provoke, which compels drivers to slow down. Intersections like the one at 240 and 250, which sees nearly 20,000 cars each day, provide a particular design challenge to engineers like Hal Jones, VDOT project manager.
So you've got old roads that were goat paths or wagon roads, and with growth patterns, they're just over capacity and not of current design standards. The growth in the Crozet area put a lot of pressure on 240 over the years. And what you would see in the mornings particularly is a huge queue back from that road, because 250 was essentially a nonstop straight through shot. So you had a lot of folks waiting in a difficult place to get out on that road.
87-year-old Kenneth Grove is a retired farmer who sells homemade cutting boards and benches in downtown Crozet most Saturdays. The key to roundabouts, he says, is to slow down.
This thing in a circle, everybody is impatient, don't want to give the right of way, and that's what the problem is, because they do not want to come to a complete stop. They just want to keep on getting up.
McCauley worries that inexperience will slow residents' ability to adjust to the new roundabout. Her plan?
Avoid it. I have my secret way to get to Shawsville. I don't want to say it because then everybody else will use it too.
Crews will finesse the roundabout through June or July, adding outer curbs and splitter islands to channel traffic and improve the site's drainage. They'll continue to leave undisturbed the 60-year-old memorial they unearthed during the project, though. 34-year-old Charles B. Satterwhite died in 1965 when his vehicle overturned, trapping the father of four inside. For WMRA News, I'm Christine Cuter.
You can see photos and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. Dominion Energy and Appalachian Power recently announced plans to install a high-voltage power line from a site near Lynchburg to Culpeper County. The companies have been holding community information meetings, drawing large crowds of mostly unhappy people. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman stopped by one in Fluvanna County.
More than 300 people showed up at the small community center in Fluvanna to learn about the Valley Link project after they got letters about the proposed power line. They packed into a large room where company experts manned a series of tables set up to address various concerns. Outside, residents waited in line for admission and shared their concerns with Radio IQ.
We need to show and push back and tell them, you can't just waltz into town and decide to take everything eminent domain. This is our county.
Yeah, we didn't move to Fluvanna County and buy property here to have it be torn up and ruined.
I'm a mom, and I'm really worried about my kids growing up in this county. Projects like this are associated with higher risks of childhood cancer.
It brings down property values.
If you don't sell them your property, they can take it from you. That's not right.
There are better ways to run it, shorter lines and more direct, but it might cost them a little bit more money. And I think the billion-dollar companies came down to Fluvanna County because they thought they could get it cheaper and not have to worry about so much opposition.
Ditto.
Many were upset by some logistical problems with the meeting itself.
Our letter said 5:30 today, and we received the letter today.
They said 5:30 to 7:30 on the letters that they sent out and 3:30 to 7:30 on the website, so you didn't know when to come.
We thought this was going to be an actual sit-down meeting, but apparently it's not, so that's disappointing.
We're curious how close they actually come to our house. I would like to see a more blown-up view of that map they sent us.
That problem aside, Dominion spokesman Craig Carper was ready to respond to local reporters about issues raised by the public.
We want to share whatever they want to know about, but also we really want feedback.
He said the original plan was to install the high-voltage line for more than 150 miles, running through 16 counties, but it scaled back to 115 miles and just 9 counties, Appomattox, Buckingham, Campbell, Culpeper, Fluvanna, Goochland, Louisa, Orange, and Spotsylvania. Three possible routes were chosen. The goal, he said, is to avoid densely populated areas, schools, pristine natural or historic places, while limiting river and stream crossings.
We're trying our best to juggle all of those things and thread the needle to ultimately have a project that meets the demand but minimizes impact wherever possible.
He conceded demand for electricity was fairly flat until data centers came along, but pointed to new industrial development in the state.
We've seen Lego, Lilly, other biotech coming to Virginia.
And he cited climate change in claiming demand for power has increased.
We are having colder winters and we're having hotter summers.
And he insisted electromagnetic energy coming from power lines does not pose a threat to human health.
There's decades of data on this, and we haven't seen any causality, us or any of our peers.
The World Health Organization classifies extremely low-frequency electromagnetic fields as possibly carcinogenic to humans based on limited evidence showing an association with childhood leukemia. The International Agency for Research on Cancer found inadequate evidence in relation to all other cancers. The utilities have looked at building along major highways, but Carper says that was a no-go.
That has come up, and it's been looked at thoroughly, and there were a lot of restrictions that prevented us from doing that.
But could this line be buried?
It hasn't been done. The technology does not exist.
The companies expect to file the Valley Link request with the State Corporation Commission in September and hope to have sign-off 1 year later, followed by 2 years of construction. I'm Sandy Houseman.
One controversial bill before the governor would limit local restrictions on large solar farms. Patrick Larson with partner station VPM breaks down the so-called ban on bans.
Solar developer Mike Doniger of Chaberton Energy supports the bill, which offers standards around setbacks, plant buffers, and other items for solar projects that require special use permits. He says that will help counties set rules that developers can work with and avoid a patchwork of regulations.
It's great to see the state stepping in to really help standardize that across the board.
The General Assembly denied a similar bill last year over concerns it overstepped local land use authority. The Virginia Association of Counties still argues that's the case and says counties should have all authority over their land use decisions. But Democrats want the state to meet clean energy goals while serving rapidly growing electricity demand. They'll need a lot of solar panels to do that.
Patrick Larson reporting. The General Assembly was considering a Senate bill to get rid of the last Confederate statues in Richmond, and then a House committee killed it. But the effort to ditch the statues is not a lost cause, Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
A statue honoring Confederate General Stonewall Jackson faces the center of the Virginia Capitol, perhaps the most prominent spot in all of Capitol Square. That statue, along with two others honoring the lost cause, were about to be removed because of a bill that passed the Senate that was included in the Senate budget. But then a House committee unexpectedly killed the bill at the last minute as budget negotiations between the House and Senate broke down. Former Senator Adam Eben of Alexandria introduced the bill to ditch the statues, and he says he's hopeful the effort will be resurrected during the budget special session next month.
I would have preferred the bill passed just to make it explicit, but I'm confident that it'll be in the final budget agreement, and very hopeful that that will prevail.
One bill that did prevail was legislation to discontinue license plates honoring Robert E. Lee and the Sons of Confederate Veterans. That measure was introduced by Delegate Dan Helmer, a Democrat from Fairfax County.
Virginia needs to end itself being in the business of celebrating traitors who killed American soldiers to defend slavery. That's not who we need to be as a country, and we're going to finish the job of making sure that America is about celebrating all Americans.
The governor has until April 13th to make a decision about the Confederate license plates, and lawmakers are expected to return to Richmond to strike a deal on the budget April 23rd. Michael Pope.
New legislation in Virginia could make it easier to get rid of an old mattress, but it might also make your next one more expensive. The General Assembly passed House Bill 86, which creates a statewide mattress recycling program. If the bill is signed by Governor Spanberger, the program would require producers and retailers to arrange for mattresses to be collected, broken down, and reused, reducing the number that end up in landfills. A recycling fee, about $20, would be added to new mattress costs to pay for the program. Governor Abigail Spanberger was at the Virginia War Memorial in Richmond Wednesday for the annual Virginia Women Veterans Ceremony. One in 12 Virginians is a veteran, Spanberger noted, as she promised to keep Virginia a top destination for veterans and those still in service.
And that includes making sure that our veterans can translate their service into civilian careers, that the women who have worn the uniform have demonstrated leadership and discipline and a commitment to mission, that translates into the skill sets that we know you all and all veterans have, but that employers understand that they want to hire.
Spanberger said she's committed to improving veteran training programs and pointed to her history with veteran town halls during her time in Congress as support for their future. Finally today, as spring approaches, the spring equinox is on Friday, honeybees are emerging from their hives. As WMRA's Aisha Pirga reported earlier in March, one of the main threats to them is an invasive mite. Virginia Public Radio's Roxy Todd visited the home of Virginia Tech's teaching apiary to learn more.
The sound of buzzing bees blends with children playing outside at a nearby elementary school. James Wilson is getting hives ready for Virginia Tech students. They learn to care for bees here at this research station.
This is our main extension and teaching apiary for Virginia Tech.
In addition to teaching students, Wilson also does outreach with hobbyist beekeepers across Virginia. A majority of his work includes how to manage an invasive pest called the varroa mite. It's currently the biggest threat to bee populations around the world. And now, another mite called Tropolelaps is currently spreading across honeybee populations in Europe.
It could be much more impactful than just the varroa mite. And that's saying something because we assume with these colonies in front of us, if we left them untreated, most of them would die out in 2, maybe 3 years at most, just from the pressure from varroa mites.
Beekeepers have been on the lookout for Tropolelaps for years, but there was a close call last fall when inspectors found the mites on a container ship off the coast of New Jersey. Researchers across the U.S. are currently collaborating with scientists in Asia to find the best ways to treat this new threat in case it does make it to the United States. In Blacksburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy your Thursday.